说的全人员都是资深培训的，目前一路都是在指导管理。
Thank you. I'm sorry that I was not able to circulate the document earlier, and I recognize that other members of the committee didn't have a chance to even look at it because I sent it through to Eddie quite late yesterday. So I'm quite satisfied if we don't have to deal with all of them today and allow some opportunity for reflection, and then we can respond next week or deal with some of those things next week. But you're quite right, I think some of them maybe we could deal with now. So let me just start, Chair. The first two submissions is in relation to the preamble. And the first one is in direct reference to the wording single authority. I recall that when we started out with the BMA, the intention was always to create a single entity, bringing a number of departments together. But I think since we've moved on since then, and although the intention is still to develop a single authority, with the exclusion of the SANDF and SAPS to a large degree, and now we see there's the interministerial dispute around customs and SARS, and that still needs to be dealt with. So I'm not sure that the wording single authority actually advances that same intention that was originally set out in the bill. And possibly the word strive to achieve a single authority might be more acceptable, but that's the submission on the first point. The second point deals with acknowledging further constitutional responsibilities of the African Defence Force. And here, Chair, this is here what we explain is that if you give recognition to the role and function of the SANDF, you should equally do so to SAPS or not do so at all. We're not understanding why there was only just special mention of the constitutional responsibility of the SANDF when their other departments also have a similar constitutional obligation. Then in Chapter 1, now I think, Chair, you can maybe just stop me at any stage if it's not unclear. And I'll try and deal with them as quickly as I can. The Chapter 1 on 111A and B, here the issue is around the interpretation of a reasonable distance. The argument we make there is to say if you don't specify the distance, it will allow far too much of discretion in extending the border law enforcement area. And the provision of a 10-kilometer radius, we believe, is already unreasonable, given that there are a number of private establishments, like private businesses within a 10-kilometer radius in many ports of entry. There's even residential homes within the ports of entry, and there's no provision in the bill that protects private individuals from reckless behavior, if I could put it that way. And possibly the solution to that would be that the border management area should be defined in each case, possibly through regulations that are published by the minister. But just to leave it open-ended as a 10-kilometer radius might include many private establishments that whose rights might be affected by the operations of offices of the BMA. Just turning over the page, Chair, the interpretation of the maritime border there, that was a bit complicated to try and understand. One had to go back and look at what the baseline and the low water mark is, and just for a person from Home Affairs, this is far too technical, but nonetheless, it took a while to understand it. And I'm not sure what exactly does that mean, and I'll put it there, that if our interpretation is correct on the on the paragraph preceding that, the last sentence, then there might be no need for a separate definition of a land border and maritime border. But I want to actually withdraw that submission, Chair, because I think that there is a need for a definition of a land border, because we do have land borders and maritime borders, so there might have to be the definition of both. So I'm just going to withdraw that last part of that submission. Then under the application of the Act, Here we are arguing that provision should also be made for the exclusion of SEPs, since its functions are also provided for in the Constitution. And given that there is also this agreement between the SEPs and DHA that confirms the role and the function of SEPs will not be superseded by the functions of BMA, the BMA cannot assume the functions of SEPs, and not to state this provision explicitly, as is in the case of the SANDF, will be in contravention of Section 13(6) of the SAPS Act, which grants members of the South African Police Services the power to search any vessel, vehicle, aircraft within a 10-kilometer radius of a port of entry without a warrant. So that role and function is specified in the South African Police Services Act that grants the powers to any member of SAPS to conduct that activity. And now you're granting exactly the same powers to officers of the BMA, yet we argued earlier, and as we understood with the agreement between SAPS and DHA, that classical policing functions will not be affected by the introduction or implementation of the BMA, but in this particular clause actually it does, because that is largely the function of SAPS and not of any other official. Then under Chapter 2, under Clause 4.2, the border law enforcement functions within the border law enforcement area and ports of entry must be performed exclusively by the officers of the authority. This again refers to the previous submission. So I won't go through the details there. It refers to the same thing. Under Chapter 3, the appointment of the commissioner... We don't think that the bill is adequate, does not provide adequately for the interpretation of fit and proper persons to be appointed to the post of commissioner. We think it should be more specific in detail about the appropriateness and fit and proper persons. In its current form, for example, if you just rely on what's there in the bill, you could have, for example, a school principal who could be the commissioner of SAPS, and I'm not sure that someone at the level of an educator has the necessary relevant experience to be able to operate an organization or a border management authority of this magnitude. But if you look at what's there in the Act, actually somebody with 10 years of senior management experience, a teacher for example, might qualify. So what we're arguing is that we think that there should be a more specific provision around who should actually qualify for a position, for that type of position, and more especially somebody who has some level of border management and security experience, given that this bill is dealing largely with security aspects. But ideally you should have somebody at that level who has that level of experience, not only senior management, but in the least some level of security background as well. Now, if you contrast that with the requirements for a commissioned officer with the provision for a commissioner, you'll see that the commissioned officers, actually, there's much more stringent requirements for someone to be appointed as a commissioner. It goes to the extent of saying that commissioned officers must be trustworthy and of exemplary character. But you don't find the same level of detail or provision that's required for the appointment of a commissioner. It should actually be the other way around if you think about it. And Chair, are we putting this proposal on the table for some consideration and response from the department on whether or not the commissioner could be appointed very much in the same process that we appoint members who serve on the IEC board, for example, where there is a list of persons who apply, and a short list is then produced from which the minister could make recommendations to the president. And our reasoning for that is that it allows for a much more open and transparent process, that for the public to have an opportunity to be able to express opinions on individuals who apply, bearing in mind that the person who runs this border management authority is going to be quite a powerful position and a very senior, important position that it holds in the borders that affect almost every single South African. I think that there should be much more openness and transparency on the appointment of the commissioner, and we're proposing that kind of appointment process. And I'm not entirely opposed to any other suggestion that the department may come up with that will contribute also to the principle of openness and transparency, rather than individuals just simply applying and the president makes the appointment. And I say this, Chair, with great respect, in that what we're trying to avoid here is a political appointment. I'll put that on the table. Given the recent history of what's going on in the country, that we would much rather that there be more openness and transparency around the appointment of especially senior officials at this level. So that's the proposal under 7.1 in Chapter 3. Then the removal of the commissioner from office, I think we've dealt with that, Chair. All right, we can move on. Appointment of officials under 13.3, it makes provision for officials to undergo appropriate security clearance processes, and that they if they refuse to do so, that they will be terminated. But what it doesn't cover is what happens if somebody does go for the security and doesn't pass that security clearance. Perhaps it's implied there, but I'm not sure that that it's sufficient on its own, and you might want to give some consideration to including something that that doesn't allow for the appointment of any person who doesn't pass the necessary security screening processes. All this one says is that you must go for the security screening, and if you refuse to go, you can be terminated. It doesn't tell you what will happen if you don't pass. Then 14.4. Here, I think it's about due process, and that's... Sorry, have I skipped something? Oh, I see. Have we dealt with that one as well, Chair? I'm not sure if we have, actually. Let me just put it on the table. The only submission of ours is there that it should be made available to any person, and this is in reference to the identification card. 14.4, the minister may only cancel a commission after notifying the officer of concern of a complaint or charge made and after allowing the officer an opportunity to respond. What it doesn't allow for, Chair, is an appeal mechanism. I know that further on in the bill it does refer to a mechanism where any person may appeal a decision of the officer. But what it does not cover is in the case of where the minister cancels the commission, merely gives the opportunity for the affected person to tell him why it shouldn't be cancelled, and then he makes the call. But there isn't a provision for that affected person to appeal the decision of the minister. And the proposal there is that we include an appeal mechanism in such instances where the minister may have to cancel the commission of an officer. Chapter 5... here, the submission refers to, I think it's 16B. The clause there says that is entitled to receive pension and retirement benefits from an organ of state as if that person were in service in their previous employment dispensation. And we're arguing that this clause assumes that all officials will be appointed from other government departments. And that there is a real possibility that there might be officers that might be appointed from the private sector who might apply for future positions. And the bill then suggests that they should enjoy the same pension benefits as their previous employment dispensation. That's the words that's used there. And it could be implied or interpreted as if they must enjoy the same benefits if they were working for Sanlam, for example, which I don't think was the intention. So perhaps maybe the bill should make provision only for former government officials to enjoy the same privilege, and not all officers, unless, of course, the intention is only officers previously employed by government or from other government departments, which I doubt that is going to be the case. Chapter 6 deals with the powers of entry, search, and seizure without a warrant. Again, I raised this earlier in that this again is a classic policing function. It's contrary to the MOU signed with SAPS and BMA. I'm not so sure that that MOU actually supports this, to say that BMA will not affect the classic policing function. This provision actually does. And then we go further to say that the clause should also specify within the border management area. So an officer may, without a warrant, exercise any power. I know that if you refer to the previous sections 18A, B, C, D, it does refer to within the border management area, but I don't think that all of them do. Then routine searches and seizures, an officer may, without a warrant, conduct a roadblock. Just I'm dealing with that part, so you don't have to keep referring back to the bill. Again, this is a classic policing function, and the argument should be removed. I don't believe that the authority should take on the functions of the police. Provision can be made for the same functions to be conducted with the assistance of SAPS, who are in any event not going to shut down their operations in the ports of entry. They're going to be there. The officers are going to be there. The police stations are going to be there. And there's no reason why that cannot be conducted by SAPS. They're not going to be removed from the border management area, and they can still continue to do those functions. Detained arrested persons and seized goods. Chair, this submission refers to, again, reasonably possible. And the clause there advances the argument that any person who is arrested, whether it's with or without a warrant, must, as reasonably possible, as soon as reasonably possible, bring that person to a police station. We're saying that it should not be left open-ended. A detained person must be dealt with in terms of Section 50 of the Criminal Procedure Act. That specifies the conditions under which a person must be detained and the procedure that needs to be followed thereafter, and should not be open-ended as it suggests. Because reasonably possible could be 4 days, because a vehicle, they didn't have a vehicle to take the detained person to a police station. In that case, it might be, one can make the argument for it being reasonable, but it would be in contravention of the Criminal Procedure Act. The bill should also specify who the relevant organ of state is. That's in reference to the above. And I think in that case it would be SAPS, unless, of course, there is a different organ of state. And I'll wait to hear the response from the department on that particular submission. Again, time frame where seized goods must be delivered. The current provision provides for reasonable, it says as soon as possible. Again, our submission is that we think that it should be specified and not left open-ended. Coming to Chapter 8, Border Technical Committee, where we had a lengthy argument earlier about the composition of the IMCC and the Border Technical Committee, and it would make sense to us that if you've got the 5 ministers, for example, sitting on the IMCC, that the corresponding head of that department should also be sitting on the Border Technical Committee. Otherwise, it does not continue the flow of coordination. And that's the submission, that to make sure you don't want to have the politicians having a discussion, but it does not filter through on the officials who are responsible to implement the decisions or the intentions of the IMCC. Chair, the next submission deals with the advisory committees, and we're not opposed to the principle of the advisory committees, but what we think it should include is the conditions, the remuneration of the advisory committees, and as well as their term. The intention there is for the minister to appoint advisory committees as and when needed, which we don't disagree with that principle. Unless, of course, the intention is to provide for the term of office of those advisory committee members in the terms of reference or in the appointment. But perhaps there should be some mention of that in the clause, that the terms of reference should make provision for the actual term of that advisory committee, and make some mention of remuneration if that's the intention of that clause. Chair, I think those are the ones for now. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure it's some of the proposals, they are based on the clauses, I think even clause 18 and 19 that have been collapsed, I think so. And then of course it's some, like as you said, that we have already dealt with. And of course some other few things I think we almost discussed right at the beginning, like the 10 kilometer thing. We debated it quite a long time. But I think it's, we may be assisted now between the DG, Elroy and Dion. Are we having some sort of responses to these ones? Because some of them, of course, like as we say, we already have answers to them. And then, you may proceed if we are ready, department.
No, thanks, Chair. No, we will divide amongst all of us. As we said that we received the document in the morning, but it's something which we're working on, it will be able to respond. So I will only deal with this issue of the single entity or authority, and then thereafter I will give it to colleagues. So let me try and explain this thing, what it means, so that if maybe we can do that, it will also clear the other issues. What we mean by single entity, that's why we're always talking about this thing of one command and control. So what it means, at a border environment, police, when they are in that border, they are not responsible to the BMA at all. They are not getting instructions from BMA. They do what they are doing. It's got nothing to do with the BMA. But the single entity, that's why I was saying, those who are responsible for border law enforcement, they will be part of BMA. They won't be reporting to police and as well as reporting to BMA. That situation is not going to come. If you talk about defense, there's going to be no defense in the borderline and say, I am here today working in the borderline, but I'm still reporting to defense. No. The borderline, as far as the border law enforcement, is going to be BMA. Those employees will be appointed by BMA, have got nothing to do with defense. But defense will go to a borderline as far as the safeguarding of the country. If there is a potential war between Mozambique and us, it's then that defense will be there. Defense, not BMA. But people are crossing in the borderline with goods, people who are crossing illegally, is the BMA officials will be there not reporting to defense at all. That's why there was that split between a 10-kilometer border and what defense will do and what they won't do. Where defense is exempted from BMA is far as the safeguarding of the country. So it will be a single entity. A person who is in the borderline, a person who is in the border will be reporting to the border BMA. BMA can say today you are working in the borderline, tomorrow you are working in the gate, that day you are in the counter. You can't say, no, my boss is defense. It's a single entity. That's why we've got an issue on the customs. When we say we can't, the way we understand the structure, it says, no, I can't have two officials that say, I'm working for SARS, I'm working for BMA, who says, no, it must be one. If now today I say, you will go and open those cargo, today you're going to go and do that, I want someone's going to say, no, for me, I'm working for SARS. That's why we are saying, if I can make an example of an airport, OR Tambo, they still AXA there. there's still a shop of Kentucky or whatever, but it's got nothing to do with the BMA. But as far as the functions of border law and function, there will be single entities. That's what we mean. So if I was to draw it, is to say BMA will deal, even police when they are there, if they go inside the port and do whatever, they do that under the command of the police. But what is about border law enforcement will be moved. That's why when we're sitting with police, they even explain this and say, when you see a police officer at OR Tambo, that officer is not dealing with one thing, can deal with the border law enforcement, it can deal with the classical police we're talking about. So that classical police is one which is out. So from SAPS, we can get maybe about 200 or 300, whatever number it is, who were dealing with the border law enforcement. And on that day, they are transferred to BMA. They cease to be police officers as far as the police. But police will continue, even today. Police might not be in a port of entry A, but tomorrow they can go and say, BMA, we want to have a police station here within that area. They will have it. Or with the current thing, they can come and say, man, we were at Bait Bridge, but because of whatever reason they have, want to move our police station from BMA, from that area, it will go to somewhere. They can do that because they've got no relation with the BMA. So that's what, you know, the single authority get checked means. So now those people who are employed by BMA, they will be under the conditions and employment of BMA, not what we have now, that when I go to a port of entry, I see an employee sitting there, says, no, me, I'm employed by this. No, it's not going to happen like that. So when Chair was even talking about accommodation and all that, those who are employed by BMA, they will have single uniform. That's why when we explain it simple, we're trying to say, once I go to a border environment, I don't want to see two uniforms or three. The uniform must be one. When police is in the board, is not reporting, there is no head of the port who can say to a police officer, do this thing today, do that. They cannot, because the police is completely out. Those who are doing the border law enforcement, they will be wearing one uniform under the command of that. So, Chair, that's what this single entity and authority means. It will be real single. But what I'm saying, AXA will be, that's why we've been differentiated and say, at a land border, we're not going to even have public works there. Once the BMA is established, it will be managing even those property and everything as one entity, not what we have now. But at the port, the maritime and airport, AXA will still be there to manage their property, but it's got nothing to do with the BMA. That's why here in the bill we only said AXA must give the reasonable accommodation without them wanting or not. Because we're saying your license of receiving these planes or whatever is based on Home Affairs or BMA at that time being there. But you can't, what was happening now, you find that you are at a harbor, but AXA TNPA says, no, I don't have a building for you here, it is in town. I say, no, that is not going to happen. You will give it in order for BMA to function, and it must be in the law. So, Chair, that's what can have the single entity means. It will remain a single entity. That's why I can have that question you were asking about what is wrong with what we're trying to do with customs. We're saying that will give us not to have a single entity. We'll have now two entities. But our approach is that it must be a single entity, so that if there is a problem, I don't go like what is happening now, as Honourable Member, you were saying, that once now there is a problem in a port of entry, ordinarily, people, they just think it is a Home Affairs issue. And it says, no, it's this and this, a multiple Now it's not going to be like that. There's going to be one organization is going to be accountable and say why the gates are not fixed in a port. It mustn't say is a public works. Why there's a congestion of traffic within that area. It mustn't say, no, I was hoping that this police or whatever will deal with it. Is the responsibility of them. So, Chair, I've tried here to explain again of the single entity and say SNDF, SAPS, and anyone else won't be part of that PMA. Those with those functions which were assuming on those entities, they will really belong to PMA, no link with any other organization. So, Chair, I'm sure it will make it now easier now when we explain other things. So I don't know about whether it's CLC or do you know who's next?
Thanks, Chair. I can start. There's just one thing and then Tietje will go further as well. Just on this issue about the reasonable distance that should be specified, our view in this regard is also that, remember, circumstances will dictate, and we've also got precedents in this regard. You cannot specifically say that you can only go 1 kilometer beyond the 10 or 2 kilometers or 10 kilometers. It depends on the specific circumstances. And remember, we also have the implementation protocols that will be in operation. And if you need the assistance of any other authority, you will then call their assistance in. And you will then proceed. So it might be 10 kilometers outside the 10 kilometers, or it might be 2 kilometers. It depends on what happens. The circumstances will dictate. So to write that in legislation is going to be, you're going to be confining yourself to a specific area, and that's going to, you're going to find yourself in difficulties at the end of the day. Thanks.
Next, whoever is ready.
Thank
But we must deal with all of them as a collective, all of them.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. I'm just going to move. I believe DG has covered quite a lot of other areas, especially with regard to the SAP as functions and the like, but colleagues will add if...
Let me just check. Why shouldn't we just go page by page? So that we don't go forward, backwards, and then... Is there anything that you want to deal with on the page one?
No, Chair. Adequately covered.
Remember that whatever you don't deal with, that means the submission, then it should be considered. It can't just be that we don't speak to any submission. We must hear your voice on them so that we are able to process. You may proceed.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. On page one, I think it's adequately dealt with. Up to the second part of page two, I was just consulted or by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. They indicate that they will be sending a legal opinion on the classic functions or classical functions or policing issues to the committee. So if we then go to the chapter 3 issues, just appointment of commissioner that goes over page on my document that I have. The presentation of the submission actually breaks down this into three parts, that there is an inadequate provision regarding the fit and proper person issue, and the second part is that there are more stringent requirements for the commissioned officers than the commissioner. And the third part is that the appointment should be subjected to the shortlist of persons recommended by the National Assembly. So I'll deal with them in that way. I think the requirement of a fit and proper person should be looked into entirely with the entire requirements and the functions that the person is going to be performing. So that's the context in which the draft is drafted. And with regard to the requirements regarding the commissioned officer being stringent than that of the commissioner, we should be mindful that the commissioner also must be a commissioned officer. If we look at clause 7G and clause 14.1 and 3, already takes care of that a commissioner also must be a commissioned officer at on appointment, or if not, must go through the necessary procedure or process in order to be able to be appointed. And on the third part of it, I think the issue of the shortlist, I think I'll maybe request Mr. Africa to deal with that, and DG perhaps, regarding the shortlist of persons as recommended by the National Assembly. If I may pause to allow that.
No, thanks. No, I think we need to understand the difference here. Is that BMA won't be a Chapter 9 institution, because what we are making an example with is those which are a Chapter 9 institution, because they are responsible to Parliament. I'm just thinking now that a commissioner for BMA is exactly the same like any other DG of a department, which now they are appointed in those processes. So BMA will be subjected to the Department of Home Affairs, is where it is reporting. I think we'll be taking it to a really in a level, which it is, but it will be transparent on the basis that the position will be advertised. But in any country, a president has got a prerogative in certain circumstances to say this is how things will happen on a particular basis, but that things will be following those processes. But not that the process won't be full. Like now the commissioner for correctional services, this thing called commissioner is still the same like a DG of a department. So there will be a transparent process which people can participate. If it is not, you have to give a reasons why you did not follow a particular process than the other. So that is the only reason. But if it was a Chapter 9, then it would be part of that.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to the removal of commissioner, is already dealt with as submitted. And then on the appointment of officials, the submission is that the bill makes provision for officers to undertake relevant security screening, but does not provide for circumstances where such officers do not meet the necessary security screening. It follows that if you don't meet the requirements of a security screening or anything in the process goes wrong, there is a process that is followed normally. However, it's something that perhaps if it needs strengthening or to be explicit, we can work around to make a bit of a suggestion so that we are explicit. Yeah. And with regard to the submission on the addition of any person, with regard to clause 13.6b, if we read it, the demand could be made by any person, as I understand the submission to be. So it doesn't have to be for any specific person. So if I have to identify myself, I identify myself to ordinarily any other person, regardless of who they may be. So I think that's the context in which that clause is drafted. And if I move on to the next page, with regard to clause 14.4, to say whenever the cancellation is made, the official must be notified, and thereafter it's only that the minister may proceed. I think the submission is that the bill does not allow for due process, and it merely says an opportunity to respond is to be given, and therefore it is said to be insufficient. But I think the fact that you are given an opportunity on its own is a process that indicates this is the intention that I am considering a cancellation of a commission, and therefore can you make representations? Unless maybe the due process could be clarified in terms of what the submission is meaning, but the opportunity on its own is a process, as we understand it.
Can I ask to hold it there so that we don't really go a long mile and just check with members that whether the clarifications that we have and of course with this very last one, whether the CCMA is still available if somebody agrees. Is that correct? Or that's an official, if the commission has been cancelled or whatever, and then after an officer has actually responded and but still feel aggrieved, what then are other processes? And then, are there any other process? Yes. So that I want us, if we want to interrogate this, we should be knowing the available parts. Yes,
yeah, Chair, you'll recall that one of the basic things we said was this organization is also subjected to Labor Relations Act. So it's not going to be exempt and say I can do as I please. And that's why now Labor, that's why we say Labor will be representing the employees, and then the full provisions of the Labor Relations Act apply, and as well as the common law. If now it says now, in any instance for that matter, that the ad tempore rule applies to any circumstances, whether I get you stealing, thinking that we are stealing, or I get you not on the gate today, I can't just similarly dismiss you. The rule is clear. I must first say, here is an allegation. Based on that, you respond. Based on that, we follow all those processes. So BMA is the entity which would be applicable, all the laws of this country applies to it. So all those rules would be there. So there's no minister who can simply say, hey, today I remove this thing to you and it ends there. No, there are processes. So that's why I say, but the basic one is to say Labor Relations Act applies fully to the BMA.
Okay. Honorable Hussein, on chapter 3, that one that deals with the fit and proper and the process as explained, and then are you a little bit comfortable?
Chair, partly, can I just go back a bit? I'll come to that one. There's just a response that I was just waiting on out in Chair, and that is the implication of the 10-kilometer radius on private properties. Yeah, you didn't cover that one too much. And then on the point that you raised now, Chair.
No, let's start with that one so that you get more clarity. And then,
Thanks, Chair. Yeah. Chair, that's why we were clear, Chair, to say there's no way that we can go and say now we clean what is in that border. But what we're talking about here is to say you deal in the 10 kilometers as far as the border law enforcement. Let me take current what is happening now. Home Affairs immigration officers have got power to arrest. But it's not an open-ended power to say I can go and arrest anybody. I arrest people only as far as contravention of the Immigration Act. If our immigration officer can arrest someone anywhere which has got nothing to do with that, that case will lose it completely. So within the 10-kilometer radius, the Border Management Authority will only be dealing with issues as far as the border law enforcement. That's why we're saying police will still be there. We can't say we are closing, no police will be there because now it is 10 kilometers. So if I'm running my shop there, we're going to say they must be closed. No, I will still have a house. I'm running my shop. BMA can't go there and say, Emma, do you have a license of running this shop? No, it's not our responsibility. It's the responsibility of that particular department. So the 10-kilometer radius is talking about as far as the border law enforcement. Let me explain, you know, that reasonable distance. Let's say I'm an immigration, I'm a border guard. I was following somebody with the drugs, and he runs and he go outside of the 10 kilometers. So I can't say now once it is 10 kilometers, I return back now because it is outside the 10 kilometers. That's why I was saying reasonable distance. Because if we don't put that in the law, as Chair, you were talking about judges, we will be arresting that person just 1 kilometer from the 10, whether I was chasing from that side. And says, no. Your arrest was outside the 10 kilometers. Therefore, you know, so that reasonable means that. But BMA official can't come from there and he comes now to Cape Town. There's no border, there's nothing. And then I say, no, I arrested this person. Yes, it was a reasonable distance. So it will be linked with that. So that's what we are talking about. And say, within the 10 kilometers to the border, life is normal. people are there, but now BMA can only go in those areas as far as the border law enforcement, which is clear what that thing means. That's what the Honorable Member to explain.
So in other words, is that a private property's rights will be violated by the BMA if they harbor somebody that has actually contravened the policies of the BMA officials. Say, like as we're saying, is if you have an immigrant who's undocumented and your immigration inspectors are pursuing him, and then he runs into Hussein's house, they're not going to stop. Hussein then will be affected by that because they will be chasing that person to get hold of that person and deal with in terms of the Immigration Act. So I think that has been explained a little bit much more clear. But otherwise, then people cannot be harassed by the BMA officials unless they are actually mingling themselves with the problems of immigration. And then the second one was...
Before you move off that point,
yeah.
I completely understand the explanation and what the intention is. But I'm not sure that the clauses provide for those scenarios sufficiently. I mean, you know, if there is reckless behavior, for example, I can't go and say, no, the DG said this involvement, that's not the way you're supposed to operate. It must be backed up by a provision in law, unless, of course, that conduct of the official is going to be governed by some sort of operational procedure within the department. Then there is sufficient provision to protect private individuals within that border law enforcement area. Let's just read one part of it. I mean, Section 18 and 19 talks about the powers and functions of that officer. He can enter any premises he wants. Anything. Search any premises within that 10-kilometer radius. I get the point that it can, you know, it's a guideline. But the principle's still there. And that is a concern. That unless there can be some sort of provision made that makes it explicit that will be conducted in line with existing regulations in the case of private companies or private establishments, that concern is not going to go away. There's just two other things, but I'm happy to just leave that one there for now and respond. But the department doesn't have to respond to it now and perhaps maybe find a way around it.
Can I just ask them to explain? Because I think we understood that even this thing of the stopping of vehicles and searching will always be done on the instruction or on the express permission of the commissioner. The border guard cannot just go there and just stop and search as they wish without the proper authority.
Yes,
you
may proceed. And then,
Chair, what we indicated last time as well is that there is provision made. We did indicate that even if you do not have, with or without a warrant, if there's, it came to the roadblocks. When there are roadblocks, it said that will be done with the, there will be a letter that will be by the commissioner that he or she is aware of what's being done, etc. So it's not like somebody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to have a roadblock this morning, and there has to be permission from the commissioner. He'll be aware of that at that point in time. So that's as far as that is concerned, Chair. I don't know if there's anything else that we need to address.
Chair, can I just add
Honourable members, if you look at 15.3, Section 15 of the bill refers to duty sanctions powers of officers of border guard. 15.3 says, when performing any border law enforcement function, an officer must exercise his or her powers in a manner that takes due regard of the fundamental rights of persons as guaranteed in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, and then it continues. So that is a general provision that we think we have built into the bill.
There is recourse for anyone that may feel aggrieved to go and explain that they are taken in the due regard or not. May proceed, Hussein.
Just the part that's outstanding about the appeal, where was that one? That was with the cancellation of commission by the minister.
Yeah.
I mean, there were two issues there. The one was, well, actually, the one issue was just that, whether or not there should be an appeal mechanism if the minister cancels the commission. I get it that he hears the other side and makes a decision, but surely that decision of the minister should also be subject to an appeal, and there's no provision for that.
I just wanted to say we need to be reminded of one thing, that the rules of natural justice, which are applicable in law, says once I have made an thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
That once I have made a decision, and in this case the minister, the rules of natural justice then says, if we were to come up with an appeal mechanism, it means to whom are we going to be appealing to? Because the Minister of Home Affairs is the overall authority within the department. Then you have a conundrum that the minister cannot, once he has made a decision, he is then said to be removed from making a similar decision again. Then the only recourse that one has, if one is aggrieved by that decision, then is to subject that decision to judicial review, and which in this case can include the CCMA review mechanisms or even the court itself, because then you can, there would not be any other person to review the decision of the executive.
Okay, with that clarity, Hussein, it's, you still want to pursue that one?
I've made a note of the response. Fine, Chief.
Okay. Elroy?
Chief, can I just add one, I think it's an important point to what Moses has said. It's important to remind ourselves that not all members of the Border Guard will be commissioned officers. Commissioned officers are a very specific cadre or layer of individuals within the organization. By and large, they would probably coincide with the management of the organization. They are the senior officers. Now, having said that, these senior officers, when a commission is conferred on someone, this is, to use layperson's language, this is a privilege. It is a special honorary kind of status that you've been given. So, and I've just conferred with the colleague here from SAPS, and because they do exactly the same within SAPS. Because it's a special cadre of individuals, there's no precedent in law for someone to have a recourse mechanism available, should this commission be withdrawn. So the point we're just trying to make is that this is not a ordinary scenario that affects everyone. This affects a particular cadre of individuals within the Border Guard, and this is a privilege to have a commission conferred onto you. So we are just saying also based on current precedent in law, we don't have a mechanism where such an individual can go and try and seek a recourse or an appeal for that. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, the officer from the state law advisor, the one that was having time pressures for us, I think it's as time allows you, you can be released. Okay? And yeah, that any time that you feel pressured, then you can be released. And then, but I think we can state, Elroy, we can state that the withdrawal of this commission state does not mean termination of employment of the office. It doesn't mean that. It is a separate thing. Is that you are employed, but then you are given a particular title to be at a particular level, or it is removed, and then you fall back to wherever you were. I think if that is the, we just make that clear, then it is fine. Then can we now respond to from 5, then going down?
Thanks, Chair. I think the
Isaac, if we are running too much fast for you, then and whoever is assisting with the drafting, then please just raise your voice. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I think with regard to clause 16.2, yes, correctly, the assumption is partly that there will be officials appointed from other government departments, but also 16.2a deals with those who will be new. But I think we will read it correctly and just make sure that we are not applying the provision in B to people who might be from the private sector. So we'll just have a proper reading of it once more. And with regard to Chapter 6, the issue of the classic policing, I think that has been dealt with. But the second part of it, that says, the commentator says, this clause should also specify within the border management area. If we look at the proposal that we had made based on the discussions that we had last week with regard to the collapsing of clause 18 and 19, we are agreeing to, I think the proposal that we'll maybe make is that the new reading will perhaps say, for example, an officer may, within the border law enforcement area or a point of entry, with or without a warrant, then start dealing with the rest. So we'll adjust it, because if we look at the proposal, under A, we're having a repetition of within the border law enforcement area, under B, within B and C also repeating, so we'll clean it up in line with the proposal. So that should be taken care of.
Okay.
Then with regard to the routine searches, I think part of...
just indicate that Honorable Hussein, if they're finished with one, and then there is something, some follow-up, then I think we must raise it.
I'm fine thus far. Thank you, Chair. Okay.
I think the issue of routine searches was slightly dealt with as well. And actually, just to also add, the routine searches are currently being done by most departments from the experience that I have with the border environment. So it's nothing new, basically. And with regard to the issue of Clause 22, that we need to add, the reference to Section 50 of the Criminal Procedure Act. I think in our discussions with regard to the comments, we had looked into the possible addition of this wording. And I think the discussion was, as it is, it suffices. If we look at Section 50, if I'm not going to be reading it, but it has got two elements to say, you bring someone to a police station to be dealt with regard to the commission of an offence, or if you made an arrest or whatever for any other reason, but there are certain circumstances that a person might be arrested or whatever, but we do not necessarily want to follow the Criminal Procedure Act. An example for with an illegal... And there is an illegal person whom we might find in the border law enforcement area, but that you do not necessarily need to refer to a police station, but you simply want to deport directly to the next country. And SAPS currently does that, where they'll arrest people who are found not to be having proper paperwork. They don't channel them through the criminal procedure, but simply hand them over to Home Affairs, and they are deported. So we wanted to avoid a particular, to be locked up in a particular area, but we'll further have a look at it. The second part of the bill should also specify who the relevant organ of state is. The challenge is it's more than one, and I'm going to give examples. You might seize whatever items that might be required to be handed over to SAPS, or SARS, agriculture, including Home Affairs. So let's say
with Home Affairs, for example, you find a person with a passport which looks to be fake or whatever, then the procedure in the Immigration Act says you need to send it over back to the country where perhaps it purports to be representing or to be have been issued by. So there are various departments depending on what is the specific issue that you are dealing with at that point. I think I was busy making notes when it came to Border Technical Committee and Advisory Committee.
Just hang on a little bit. And then on the one that you have just moved out, Honorable Hussein, because with the organ of state as well, there is possibility that after the promulgation of this particular act, a particular function may be moved from one department to the other. And then for it not to warrant this particular bill to be amended, if it refers to the relevant organ of state, then it will just move with that particular function. And then as and when it is moved. So it's, I think if they talk about the relevant organ of state, unlike specifying Home Affairs or SAPS or whatever, it really makes it much more easier that if the function is allocated, is removed from SAPS to state security, then state security starts becoming a relevant organ of state. Yeah, you may comment if there is anything.
Chair, I just want to go back to the earlier part. It's the part of the Criminal Procedure Act, and the example that was used there, I'm not sure, and if I would just follow that same argument, that if you arrest somebody that you have to deport, this clause does not refer to that. This one refers, and it says specifically that when you arrest somebody, you must take them to a police station within a reasonable time. And the issue that's before you there is what exactly is that reasonable time should be. Should it be 48 hours in terms of the criminal procedure? That's the issue.
Shouldn't we leave that for regulations? Because shouldn't we flag it to say then that when the regulations comes here, then we see that these things have been specified, because over time they do change. And then... I'm not sure. I'm just trying to propose.
Yeah, Chair, we're dealing with the bill now, so
yes.
I would rather deal with the thing now. And when
it
we
is
get to the
it is provided, and then I think it's for reasonable time. But then the regulations now must start talking to the reasonable time, so that when that reasonable time is not practical, they are able to amend the regulation rather than amending the act. And that was just my provision to provide for the something that forms the basis of regulations to be made, then it is fine in terms of time. Raput, I will come to you, then you can respond after Raput.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chairperson. We just received this DA proposal here, and now we are getting in every little thing, fit person. You know, I think some of the things really that are necessary, they are more of human resource than really for this committee. And I think that why can't we, what the DA have proposed, why can't we get it in writing? Because we got it this morning again. Now we are getting right in the deep issues. I think really it's unfair for us. It's already quarter to two. Please, Chair, I thank you.
Thank you. We are just about to come to the end of this meeting. We are too close.
I must ask for an opportunity to respond. I mean, the member is hungry, so we don't have lunch.
You'll come in. That's why I'm trying to protect you, because we agreed that we are going to deal with your document.
Yeah.
And then you are reasonably protected.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I think that Honorable Raputi has a point. In listening what we are discussing now, it means members of parliament are now becoming administrators, talking to administrative issues. So my request is that let us just leave it there, and the department will finish it. That is my submission, Chair. I thank you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. That's why I was saying is that if there is any provision that talks to within reasonable time, it is adequate. Because that reasonable time, then the department must explain in terms of regulation what that means. And then,
I asked for an opportunity to respond, and I'm going to insist on it.
Mekenye, what is burning you? Yes.
I think at first you said, must pick up points that can be discussed now, and then we carry on with this discussion next week, to my understanding. But now, I also concur with what Raput is saying. Now we are getting deeper and deeper, even in administrative issues, as they say. I think this is very unfair, because, for example, we are just listening now. We can't, because we are not even, we have just got this document. Now we didn't go over this document. So now the problem is that, really, it is stressing us. Thank
okay.
You.
Chair, it's for this reason that you would recall before I even started putting this document on the table. I know members get angry very easily after 1 o'clock.
No,
you must let me finish.
You might not like what I say, but you must
listen to it. And I asked the question about what process you're going to follow.
Yes.
I put that on the table first. And I even extended the opportunity to say, let me present the document, let the department go away, let members go and look at the document and do what they have to do and come back. I put that to you.
I'll protect you.
So you chose to go down this road, and I'm following the road that you just decided. So if members of this committee got a problem with the process, I must take it up with you.
We are almost done. Just proceed. We made a proposal that the 4 days or whatever, then... is it not okay if it can be dealt with in terms of regulation? As long as the Act provides that, there will be a reasonable time.
He doesn't have lunch.
Chair, I'm not sure that that's the case, but I'm happy to flag it. But I'm not convinced that it covers the provision.
If
I hear the response. And
if they have not provided, if they can provide that kind of a provision that talks to some sort of reasonable time or blah blah blah. And then so that then the actual times can be in the regulation. Elroy?
No, sir, thank you, Chair. No, obviously we've been listening to the members. So just on this particular issue, our understanding of the two main issues raised by the DA, there are two specific issues. The one is the time frame issue, and we'll come to that, and the second one is the relevant organ of state. So with regard to the relevant organ of state, I would like to believe that my colleague TLC explained that it's either to a police station or to any other relevant organ of state, and there are different laws in the country that apply. So that matter should be dealt with. When it comes to the issue of timing, can I just ask the members to really indulge us in reflecting on how this will play itself out in practice? The BMA is going to be responsible not only for ports of entry. That is the easiest scenario where maybe we can think about a time frame, but even we are cautioning against that. The more difficult scenarios would be in a land borderline environment and in a maritime environment in the middle of the sea, middle of the night, a Coast Guard vessel runs out of diesel. It's going to be very difficult to begin to stipulate concrete time frames in those kinds of scenarios. So, Chairperson, let's give us the benefit of reflecting on this, and we'll come back with proposals on this. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, that is. I think you understand exactly what is happening, is that you don't just need an open-ended situation. And then, as you say, is there will be different scenarios. That's why I'm saying the best thing is to deal with the times in the regulations, wherever we need to bring certainty, if we have confiscated a thing or whatever, or we have apprehended a person, and then to take that particular person or goods or whatever to the relevant whatever organ of state or organ office, then what sort of times that would be involved. That's a matter of regulations as far as I'm concerned.
Chair, may I just ask, and obviously we'll also go and reflect on that, because look, the basic principle is in terms of your Act, if there's something that you deal with substantive issues, that should be captured in your legislation.
Yeah.
If it's obviously you can go to regulations, but once you start looking at people's rights and obligations, things like that. It's something that you might want to deal with in the Act, and you can't put it in the regulation. So we'll have to go and reflect on that. We hear what the Chair, we've heard what the committee members say.
Yeah.
We'll take that on board. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Then you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to bring us back a bit. Sorry, I'm not going to talk on the routine searches and so on, but just about the classic policing functions, which also seem to be featured in a number of the amendments proposed or comments made by the DA. I made an undertaking that we will provide the committee with a legal opinion to that effect. But just to explain...
That's what I thought we agreed.
Yeah, yes, Chair, but I just...
So you want to preempt your legal opinion?
No, we will provide it next week, Chair.
So now you want to preempt it? That's what I'm asking.
I didn't want it...
Because we agreed that we'll await for it.
No, if the Chair prefers that I rather...
Okay, you can say what you want to say, but provided that document comes exactly on the same line, doesn't contradict you, otherwise you're going to create problems for us.
It won't contradict
you.
Chair, part of the problem with classic policing functions, and we also have discussions with SAPS on this, is that there is no definition of what classic policing functions are. So it must be remembered that in the border environment, police will be there, and they will be performing a number of these functions together with Home Affairs. But those functions will be transferred by way of the proclamation. So, and there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the SAPS a constitutional mandate in terms of the borders per se, as is given to defence, for instance. So, there is a provision that comes from the old Constitution, the interim Constitution, that is revised in the through the transitional provisions in the new Constitution, that basically states that as long as that provision stands, the police can perform certain functions on the borderline, but it can be repealed by way of an act of parliament or amended by way of an act of parliament. So what we are saying is once this is now enacted, it will become an act of parliament. So we may amend those functions through this legislation. So it won't be a constitutional mandate that we change. And it won't interfere with the classic policing functions of the police that is now contained in the current section 205 of the Constitution.
All right.
Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks for that clarity. Can we then go to Chapter 8, then, Department?
Chair, as I was indicating, by the time Honorable Hussein was dealing with the issue, I was making notes, so Advocate Malagata will deal with the two issues. Thank you.
Okay. Let him proceed and make our life difficult.
Chair, I thought Honorable Hussein had said on Clause 26 to say that the clause must reflect the membership of the IMCC. But we, legislatively, if we have committees that are coming from departments, it therefore follows that the technical committee replicates what is already on the first. So it therefore follows. On the issue related to Clause 27, we need to be reminded that in terms of advisory committees, the PFMA, if you look at the founding statement for the establishment of the BMA, it does say that it's a Schedule 3A in terms of the public finance. So advisory committee's remuneration would be determined in terms of the PFMA rules, in terms of committees. And it can also be dealt with in terms of the appointment letters of the members of the advisory committee. That becomes a contractual relationship between the minister and the members of that committee.
Okay, but when it comes to the Border Technical Committee, I'm sure you have not ignored what we have discussed early in the morning, that it should be expanded. The provision must be expanded that you can bring more people from even other affected departments whose ministers may not be in the IMCC. You mustn't forget that one. And Hussein, on the last chapter 8, are you happy about the remunerations and the rest? Okay, then the overall comment on your submission.
Chair,
you're happy.
Thank you. I mean, I've got enough responses, some of which I think, to me, on the face of it, makes sense, and others that we can apply our minds to it.
Yeah.
But I'm satisfied with the responses that we've received. Thank you very much.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And then I think on that score is that we'll expect the drafters then to produce something in that line. And then with those all those elements that the department then have promised now to actually try and deal with them to assist the drafting. And then to also try and capture what we have actually spoken about. And then, honorable members, I've got this now as the last thing for today. You'll remember in one meeting when we were having the quarterly expenditure report from the department that we learned that the department was subjected to a cut on compensation of employees by some letter of the cabinet decision somewhere in January this year. And then the department said that they are now having problems of employing people, even at OR Tambo. If an officer vacates the position, then they are not able to do that because they were given a ceiling where they must go down to. And then we really had a problem with that, and then we said that we will support the department, you know, to really get additional funding and also to that effect in terms of that. Now I have written the letter. The letter is in my hand now. I'm not sure whether I should read this letter, but let me read it so that it becomes your letter. Then this letter is directed to the DG of Finance. Then the heading is compensation of employees funding pressure for the Department of Home Affairs. I'm writing to yourself on the above mentioned matter relating to the said department. During our fourth quarter of 2015-16 engagement with the Department of Home Affairs, we have learned startling revelations that the department was put on a program to reduce spending on personnel by 253,967 million rand and 396,842 million rand for 2017/18 and 2018/19 respectively. These result in ceiling set at 3.146825 billion for 2016-17, 3.233745 billion for 2017-18 and 3.328378 billion for 2018-19 on compensation for employees. As a consequence of this, the Department of Home Affairs is unable to fill vacant posts that exist, even those at managerial level. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs felt strongly against this due to the following reasons. One, the department has recently been put under Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. It is expected that the department should strengthen its units and personnel to fulfill its security mandate. This will include appointing appropriately trained persons in security functions, train existing personnel in appropriate security skills, and an increase in the immigration inspectorate that has been limiting the department for many years. Two, currently cabinet has decided to establish a border management authority. This entity will require appropriate personnel as from 2017/18. The ceiling is applicable in those outer years of the medium term expenditure framework period. We therefore experience a situation that the department is expected to manage borders, immigration, and refugees, and most importantly, secure the country through these activities. In fact, it is giving service to everybody within our border and some outside our borders, but the budgetary allocations negate this. The committee felt strongly to make a plea to yourself and the Minister of Finance to exempt this department on this cabinet decision of 13 January 2016 and consider budgetary allocation requests by the department for the purpose of filling vacant posts, appoint appropriately trained security personnel, increase immigration inspectorate, and progressively staff the Border Management Authority. Your positive consideration in this matter will enhance security of our country by improving security of our borders, inspectorate, and processes at our offices and ports of entry or exit. Then yours faithfully, the chairperson. That is the content of this letter that we feel that it will be, it should be sent to the Department of Finance for attention of the DG as well as the minister. Any comment? Agreed? Then where is the envelope? You have already handed over. Oh, it's already handed over to the parliamentary liaison officer of finance. Can we confirm that you have received it, Chief?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you. thank you very much. Honourable members, then this should be bringing us to the end. Okay. I understand that there is an application that is being rolled out for the members, I think, to receive documentation from Parliament through our gadgets, mm-hmm. no longer in hard paper. And then in the next meeting, if we can bring all our gadgets, our iPads and whatever, those that we can receive documents so that we can be assisted for the app to be uploaded into our equipment next week. Yes, what he's saying is that if we have got challenges like myself that were born before technology, then we can bring those equipment so that we are assisted for the application to be loaded on our system. Then that is next week. Thank you very much for having stood here for quite a long time. But I think one must appreciate that we have done a lot of work today. That is going to assist those that are drafting to actually move closer to 99.9% when we are waiting for that one clause of the very formidable treasury. I think we'll be waiting for that one. Thank you very much. Thanks for the department for being here and including subs and all our support staff that are here. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
You may say that much of the problems are
not why? How can you debate shut up until 2 o'clock in Lamina Land? Land is closed everywhere now.
No, but we
have to
Yes.
who are fit and proper.